Blog Talk Radio.
Africa and the truth about the Ark of the Covenant. I want to hear your thoughts on what's going on tonight, and I hope my I'm getting out real good, Mary. I want to be able to get out without cutting out.
I want to say to you, Pearl, I'm glad to have you here. Now we're going into the next month.
And there's a lot going on. I want you to take this scripture down.
Psalm 36
and Psalm 64.
Would you get ready as we
I'm praying for those families that lost loved ones. And it's so much evil
that's going on throughout the land.
And we must pray and call on our ancestors, I say. And tonight, we're going to look into what happened in Africa. What happened in Chicago.
What happened in Detroit, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana. Storms back to back.
Floods back to back. And hurricanes coming back to back. You know, there's a lot going on.
And I want you to be a part of what's going on tonight. Tonight is also without an end of us.
Well, you said Bishop, the young lady asked me, what do you mean your ancestors? I'm talking about your mother, grandmother, your ancestors, your family members, some you know about and some you don't know about. But in the spirit realm, they will come to see about you. We got to deal with life.
They came from Africa, and we came from Africa handcuffed.
We were made to be slaves. We built America, and we didn't get paid for it.
So it leaves us kind of in limbo.
And that limbo, where do we go from here? Psalms 29, the Spirit just brought me that. And Exodus 14:14. God has to work it out.
Because we are dealing with money spirit. We're dealing with people that don't understand how the world exists.
God made you to be a God and a goddess.
If you're a woman, you're a God.
Now, if you don't accept what God gives you, it'll lay out there.
Every man needs to know that he's God. And when he said things in the universe, every woman needs to know that she's a goddess.
But if you don't know that you're God, you have to tell your ancestors, I say, I am ancestor, bear yet with you, and you have to make sure that your ancestors come to watch over you and come to give you your bidding. What do you want your ancestors to do? What must they do for you?
First, they must bring you knowledge and wisdom. But nobody ever told you, you lost.
And I want you to be found. No, I'm praying for you, Deborah, praying for you, Lisa, praying for you, Joe, praying for you, every expression. We're going to do a little bit more.
Is the Garden of Eden, a paradise where the first humans, Adam and Eve, lived in harmony with all creation. The biblical account doesn't pinpoint a geographical location for Eden, but several theories propose that this paradise might have been in Africa. One such theory draws upon the geological evidence suggesting that the Pishon, Gihon, Tigris, and Euphrates rivers, described in Genesis 2:10, 14 could be associated with regions in or near Africa. The Gihon, in particular, is described as encircling the entire land of Cush, which many scholars identify as Ethiopia, or Sudan in Africa. These geographical correspondences suggest that humanity's birthplace might have been in Africa. Following the timeline of Genesis, after the flood, humanity was reborn through Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Ham is a figure of great significance here. In Genesis 10, he's described as the progenitor of many nations, including the Cushites, Egyptians, and Canaanites. These groups, widely believed to represent African populations, point towards the lineage of a substantial part of humanity originating from Africa. Ham's descendants are said to have spread throughout Africa, making Ham's lineage a foundation stone for many African nations. Even today, these nations carry the echoes of their past, resonating through stories passed down through generations. The biblical narratives are threads that highlight the prominent roles of Africa's oldest civilizations, notably Egypt and Ethiopia. Known for their rich history, these African powerhouses serve as backdrops for many pivotal moments and figures in biblical texts. Egypt, the land of the pharaohs, is mentioned numerous times in the Bible, often as a place of refuge in Revelation. The book of Genesis narrates the story of Joseph, who was sold into slavery, rose to power in Egypt, and eventually saved his family from famine. The influence of Egypt permeates the foundational stories of Judaism and Christianity. A young Jesus was taken to Egypt by his parents, Mary and Joseph, to escape King Herod's massacre of infants, making Egypt a sanctuary in the most dire of circumstances. Similarly, Ethiopia holds a substantial place in the biblical narrative. The Ethiopian eunuch, mentioned in Acts 8:26-40, is a particularly poignant figure. Baptized by Philip the Evangelist, this individual is considered by many historians to be the first African convert to Christianity, marking the spread of the faith into the African continent. Furthermore, Ethiopia's Queen of Sheba, mentioned in Kings 10, 1, 13, and Chronicles 9, 1, 12, visited King Solomon, a meeting that has been immortalized in Ethiopian tradition, notably in the Kevre Nagast. Moses, a central figure in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, was married to an Ethiopian woman, according to Numbers 12, 1. This demonstrates yet another link between the religious narrative and the African continent. As we delve deeper into the Africa-rooted narratives of the Bible, we find that many key biblical figures have deep connections to the continent. Moses, one of the most significant figures in the Old Testament, was born and raised in Egypt. According to the book of Exodus, Moses was adopted by the Pharaoh's daughter and grew up in the Egyptian royal court. In the later part of his life, Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt in a mass exodus, further strengthening the link between the Jewish narrative and Africa. Joseph, another pivotal figure, also had deep connections to Egypt. After being sold into slavery by his brothers, Joseph eventually rose to become the governor of Egypt, as told in Genesis 41. His journey is a narrative arc that places Egypt at the center of his personal transformation and the survival of his family during a devastating famine. King David, a legendary figure in biblical tradition, is known for his military conquests and his rule over a unified kingdom of Israel and Judah. However, what might be less known is that David's great-grandmother Ruth was a Moabite, an ancient nation located in modern-day Jordan, bordering Egypt and often culturally and politically aligned with it. This connection, though indirect, nonetheless ties King David to the larger African narrative. Perhaps one of the most intriguing narratives connecting Africa to biblical accounts is the story of the Queen of Sheba, who visited King Solomon in Jerusalem, as recounted in Kings 10, 1, 13, and Chronicles 9, 1, 12. While the location of Sheba is debated, many traditions place it in modern-day Ethiopia or Yemen. In Ethiopian tradition, the Queen of Sheba's son by Solomon, Menelik, brought the Ark of the Covenant to Ethiopia, where it resides to this day, according to local belief. These genealogical ties and geographical connections of major biblical figures further underline the substantial link between biblical narratives and the African continent. The theory of hidden African identity in the Bible. This theory, suggested by theologians and scholars alike, proposes that many biblical figures and nations may have been of African origin, their identities obscured or changed over time due to various socio-political reasons. One such scholar, Dr. Cain Hope Felder, in his work Troubling Biblical Waters, Race, Class, and Family, explores the African presence in the Bible, emphasizing the African identity of biblical figures and nations. Felder and others argue that Eurocentric interpretations of the Bible have overlooked or diminished the significant African presence in these narratives. An example of this hidden African identity can be found in the biblical figure of Zipporah, Moses' wife. Zipporah was a Midianite, and the Midianites are believed to have originated from Cush, which according to Genesis 10, 6, 7, was located in Africa. Another instance is the identification of Cushites in the Bible, a term that traditionally refers to individuals from the land of Cush, often associated with regions in Africa south of Egypt. Moreover, we delve into the concept of Ham, the son of Noah, who is traditionally associated with the origin of African peoples. According to Genesis 10, 6, the sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Mizraim is often identified with ancient Egypt, and Cush is traditionally associated with areas in Africa south of Egypt, including Sudan and Ethiopia. This lineage makes a compelling case for the deep-rooted connections between Africa and the biblical narrative. The notion of Africa's identity in the Bible extends even to biblical prophecy. Africa has played a significant role in fulfilling various biblical prophecies, further linking the continent to the biblical narrative. For instance, the prophecy in Genesis 15:13, 14, which predicted the Israelites' enslavement and eventual liberation, took place in Egypt, an African nation. Additionally, prophecies in the books of Ezekiel and Daniel reference African locations and rulers, intertwining Africa's history with prophetic narratives. By uncovering the hidden African identities within the Bible, we realize that the roots of biblical history may be more intertwined with Africa than traditionally thought, an aspect often overlooked but undoubtedly significant. Prophecies in the Bible have predicted crucial events concerning African nations, underscoring their spiritual and historical significance. Let's take a closer look at the nations of Egypt and Ethiopia in biblical prophecy. In the book of Isaiah, these two African nations are frequently mentioned. Isaiah was a prophet in the 8th century BC kingdom of Judah, who is said to have prophesied about the rise and fall of many nations. Among his prophecies, Egypt and Ethiopia stand out prominently, symbolizing the spiritual significance of Africa in these biblical narratives. For instance, in Isaiah 19:19-20, the prophet speaks of a future time when an altar to the Lord will be in the heart of Egypt and a monument to the Lord at its border. This prophecy seems to highlight a spiritual awakening or transformation within Egypt. Further in Isaiah 20, the prophet predicts a time when Egyptians and Ethiopians will be led away captive, signifying the geopolitical changes to occur in these regions. Yet these prophecies about Egypt and Ethiopia aren't solely focused on doom and destruction. For example, Isaiah 18. 1:7 contains a prophecy about Ethiopia, where God acknowledges the gifts that the Ethiopians bring to him. In Isaiah 19:24-25, a prophecy about Egypt's future redemption reads, "In that day Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, Blessed is Egypt my people, and Assyria the work of my hands, and Israel my inheritance." These instances of prophecy regarding Africa, specifically Egypt and Ethiopia, highlight the spiritual significance and intricate role these regions have in the grand biblical narrative. They serve as a testament to Africa's central role in biblical history and prophecy, further supporting the idea of a deep-rooted connection between Africa and the Bible. In our ongoing exploration of Africa's pivotal role in the Bible, let's turn our attention to specific biblical figures who have clear and direct connections with the African continent. Their stories not only reinforce Africa's presence in biblical narratives, but also underline the contributions these individuals made to the Christian faith. Firstly, let's discuss Simon of Cyrene. Cyrene was an ancient city located in modern-day Libya, North Africa. The city was a significant hub in the Hellenistic world, boasting a large and vibrant Jewish community. Simon enters the New Testament narrative in a brief yet unforgettable moment. As recounted in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew 27, 32, Mark 15, 21, and Luke 23, 26, Simon was the man compelled by the Romans to carry the cross of Jesus as he was led to his crucifixion. Despite the brevity of his appearance, Simon's act has become emblematic of Christian discipleship and bearing one's cross, making him a noteworthy figure within Christian tradition. Another compelling character from the African continent is the Ethiopian eunuch, introduced in Acts 8:26-40. This man, a high-ranking court official under Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, traveled to Jerusalem to worship. On his return journey, he encountered Philip the Evangelist, who explained the prophecies of Isaiah to him, leading to his baptism and conversion to Christianity. His story is significant because it marks one of the first recorded instances of Christianity spreading beyond the Jewish community and reaching the African continent. As we continue to uncover Africa's profound imprint on the biblical narrative, it's imperative that we delve into the realm of African wisdom and philosophy and how it may have shaped biblical literature. The Old Testament, particularly books like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, offers an insightful arena for this exploration. African wisdom, deeply ingrained in the continent's traditions and culture, has long been a reservoir of knowledge, guiding societal norms, values, and behaviors. It's expressed in various forms, including oral literature, proverbs, folk tales, and philosophical teaching. Some scholars propose that these traditions could have influenced the wisdom literature found in the Bible. The Book of Proverbs, for instance, is a collection of wisdom sayings that instruct readers on how to live righteously, prudently, and in fear of God. While many of these proverbs are attributed to King Solomon, it's worth noting that Solomon was significantly influenced by his meeting with the Queen of Sheba, a powerful figure from Africa. Moreover, the wisdom tradition of using proverbs to convey deep truths is prevalent in many African cultures, suggesting a potential connection. Ecclesiastes, another wisdom book, is known for its profound philosophical reflections on the meaning of life, the nature of human existence, and the quest for understanding. Some of the philosophical notions echoed in Ecclesiastes, such as the transient nature of earthly pursuits and the importance of recognizing a higher divine purpose, are reminiscent of teachings found in African wisdom traditions. African origins of humanity wouldn't be complete without exploring the Book of Enoch. This ancient Jewish religious text, attributed to Enoch, the great-grandfather of Noah, reveals a unique perspective on the antediluvian world, fallen angels, and prophecy. Enoch's Ethiopian Association makes it compelling to posit that these remarkable encounters and teachings unfolded in the African landscape. Enoch's narrative is an enthralling tapestry woven with mystical journeys and meetings with divine beings. According to the text, Enoch is taken to the heavens, a trip during which he receives profound insights about the cosmos, the secrets of creation, and divine judgments. This venture into heavenly realms and the subsequent imparting of wisdom is a pivotal event, one that scholars believe holds traces of African spiritual traditions, particularly those emphasizing direct encounters with the divine. In addition, the Book of Enoch introduces the concept of the Watchers, or fallen angels, who descended upon the earth and intermingled with humanity, teaching them various arts, sciences, and divine secrets. Some theorize that this descent of heavenly beings and the resulting spread of knowledge might symbolize ancient interactions between advanced civilizations and indigenous African tribes. Enoch's prophecies, especially those concerning judgment and divine justice, bear an uncanny resemblance to some African tribal prophecies. The emphasis on ethical conduct, consequences for transgressions, and a system of cosmic justice aligns with several African wisdom traditions. Through the lens of the Book of Enoch, we're invited to view Africa as a setting for heavenly revelations, divine wisdom, and mystical experiences, marking it as a significant cornerstone in the construction of biblical narratives. While the Emerald Tablets aren't traditionally part of the biblical canon, they are vital sources that illuminate the profound intellectual and spiritual heritage of Africa, specifically ancient Egypt. The Emerald Tablets are a fascinating repository of cryptic verses, laden with allegories and profound metaphysical insights. These tablets, purportedly written by Thoth, encapsulate a comprehensive worldview and understanding of reality from an ancient perspective. They delve into profound topics such as the nature of existence, the structure of the cosmos, principles of harmony and balance, laws of cause and effect, and the exploration of one's divine nature. The knowledge encoded within the Emerald Tablets aligns harmoniously with various wisdom traditions originating from Africa. From the principle of Maat, the ancient Egyptian concept embodying truth, balance, order, and harmony, to the Hermetic axiom, as above, So below, hinting at a harmonious interconnection between the cosmos and life on Earth, these teachings bear the unmistakable imprint of African philosophical thought. The Emerald Tablets also mention the lost civilization of Atlantis and its downfall, reminding humanity of the perils of disharmony and the abuse of knowledge. These narratives, although shrouded in myth and legend, have parallels in African oral traditions, which carry warnings about societal imbalance and disunity. Continuing our journey through the rich tapestry of African-rooted knowledge, we turn our attention to the Apocrypha, a collection of biblical texts not traditionally included in the standard canon. These ancient texts, while often overlooked, reveal profound links to the African continent and its influence on early biblical literature. The Apocrypha, literally meaning hidden in Greek, consists of numerous books, letters, and wisdom literature that were part of the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible. The Septuagint was widely used in Africa, especially in regions such as Alexandria, which was a vibrant hub of intellectual and spiritual exchange during the Hellenistic period. Within the Apocrypha, the wisdom of Sirach, also known as Ecclesiasticus, stands out due to its clear resonances with African wisdom tradition. Composed by Jesus ben Sirach in the 2nd century BCE, this remarkable work offers a vast compendium of moral teachings, ethical guidelines, and sage advice. The themes addressed in the wisdom of Sirach echo the core values commonly found in African wisdom traditions. It emphasizes reverence for ancestors, recognizing their wisdom and teachings as vital spiritual assets to guide and enrich the lives of subsequent generations. This strong connection to ancestral heritage is a fundamental aspect of many African cultures. The wisdom of Sirach also champions the importance of community solidarity, advising respect for the elders, maintaining harmonious relationships, and valuing collective well-being over individual gain. This societal view aligns closely with the African concept of Ubuntu, the belief in a universal bond of sharing that connects all humanity. Additionally, the wisdom of Sirach places a great deal of emphasis on natural harmony and respect for the earth, principles that are deeply embedded in African spirituality and worldviews. It encourages living in alignment with the natural world, a concept mirrored in African ecological philosophies that view humanity and nature as inseparable entities of a holistic existence. African spiritual heritage takes us next to the Nag Hammadi Library, a trove of early Christian and Gnostic texts unearthed in Egypt. These scriptures, hidden away for centuries, bring to life Africa's pivotal role in early Christian thought and the development of Christian mysticism. The Nag Hammadi Library was discovered in 1945 near the town of Nag Hammadi in Upper Egypt. The discovery consisted of 13 codices containing 52 texts, a treasure chest of knowledge that expanded our understanding of early Christianity and Gnosticism. These writings, steeped in the African milieu of their origin, provide an invaluable window into the spiritual landscape of the era and location. Among these texts are the Gospel of Thomas and the Gospel of Philip, both of which echo African thought and mysticism. The Gospel of Thomas, a collection of 114 sayings of Jesus, diverges from the traditional narrative structure of the canonical Gospels and instead emphasizes direct wisdom teaching, a method reminiscent of African oral tradition. Its emphasis on inner knowing and spiritual self-discovery aligns closely with African wisdom tradition's focus on personal experiential knowledge. The Gospel of Philip, another text within the Nag Hammadi Library, also exhibits themes and perspectives that resonate with African spirituality. Its focus on spiritual symbolism, interpretation of religious rituals, and the notion of divine union present an alternative, more mystically inclined Christianity that bears similarities to African spiritual philosophies. By shedding light on these texts from the Nag Hammadi Library, we underscore Africa's substantial influence on early Christian and Gnostic traditions. This connection can provide us with an enriched understanding of the possible mutual influences and shared wisdom traditions between Africa and the ancient Near East. African proverbs are a profound source of wisdom, passed down from generation to generation, encapsulating the philosophical, moral, and social ethos of various African cultures. These bite-sized pieces of wisdom often contain timeless truths, practical advice and moral lessons that transcend geographical and cultural boundaries. Biblical wisdom literature, including the book of Proverbs, Job, and Ecclesiastes, likewise present a wealth of wisdom teachings in a similar format. Their emphasis on moral integrity, right living, and the pursuit of wisdom parallel the themes often seen in African proverbs. Take, for instance, the book of Proverbs. Many of its proverbs, like pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall, Proverbs 18:18, echo the essence of African proverbs like the Swahili proverb, pride is the mother of all mistakes.
There are 2,700 robocalls made every second in the U.S. Anyone has been on the receiving end?
Such parallels suggest an underlying connection between these religious traditions. The book of Job and its emphasis on human suffering and divine justice similarly resonates with the philosophical depth found in African proverbs. And Ecclesiastes, with its contemplative tone, mirrors the reflective nature of many African proverbs.
Could these similarities indicate that wisdom loves what was given to consciousness? Chapter 1. The words of the Blessed Elizabeth represent the blessing of the elect and righteous who will be living in the day of tribulation, when the wicked and godless are to be removed. Righteous eyes were opened by God, saw the visions of the Holy One in the heavens, which the angels showed him. And from them I heard everything.
And from them I understood, as I saw, but not for this generation, but for a remote one, which is for to come. Concerning the elect, I said, I took up my parable concerning them. The Holy Great One will come forth from his dwelling, and the Eternal God will tread upon the earth, even on Mount Sinai, and appear from his camp, and appear in the strength of his might from the heaven of heavens. And all shall be smitten with fear, and the watchers shall quake, and great fear and trembling shall seize them unto the ends of the earth. And the high mountains shall be shaken, and the high hills shall be made low, and shall melt like wax before the flame. And the earth shall be wholly rent in sunder, and all that is upon the earth shall perish, and there shall be judgment upon all men. But with the righteous, he will make peace, and will protect the elect, and mercy shall be upon them, and they shall all belong to God, and they shall all be prospered, and they shall all be blessed, and he will help them all, and light shall appear unto them, and he will make peace with them. And behold, he cometh with 10,000s of his holy ones, to execute judgment upon all, and to destroy all the ungodly, and to convict all flesh of all the works of their ungodliness, which they have ungodly committed, and all the hard things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Chapter 2. Observe everything that takes place in the heavens, how they do not change their orbits. And the luminaries which are in the heaven, how they all rise and set in order, each in its season, and transgress not against their appointed order. Behold ye the earth, and give heed to the things which take place upon it, from first to last, how steadfast they are, how none of the things upon earth change, but all the works of God appear to you. Behold the summer and the winter, how the whole earth is filled with water, and clouds and dew and rain lie upon it. Chapter 3. Observe and see how in the winter all the trees seem as though they had withered and shed all their leaves, except 14 trees which do not lose their foliage, but retain the old foliage from 2 to 3 years till the new comes. Chapter 4.
Stop paying for electricity. I'm going to show you how to reduce your electric bill for free. I have this power saver. On the left, this company was selling it for $100. I was able to...
and again observe ye the days of Sabbath. And you seek shade and shelter by reason of the heat of the sun. And the earth also burns with growing heat, and so you cannot tread on the earth or on a rock by reason of its heat. Chapter 5. Observe ye how the trees cover themselves with green leaves and bear fruit. Wherefore, give ye heed and know with regard to all his works, and recognize how he that liveth forever hath made them so. And all his works go on thus from year to year forever, and all the tasks which they accomplish for him, and their tasks change not, but according as God hath ordained, so is it done. And behold how the sea and the rivers in like manner accomplish and change not their tasks from his commandments. But ye have not been steadfast, nor done the commandments of the Lord. But ye have turned away and spoken proud and hard words with your impure mouth against his greatness. O ye hard-hearted, no peace. Therefore shall he execrate your days, and the years of your life shall perish, and the years of your destruction shall be multiplied in eternal execration, and ye shall find no mercy. In those days ye shall make your names an eternal execration of all the righteous, and by you shall all who curse, and all the sinners and godless shall imprecate by you. And for you, the godless, there shall be a curse. And all the elect shall rejoice, and there shall be forgiveness of sins, and every mercy and peace and forbearance. There shall be salvation unto them, a goodly light. And for all ye sinners, there shall be no salvation. And on you all shall abide a curse. And for the elect, there shall be light and joy and peace. And they shall the earth. And then there shall be bestowed upon the elect wisdom, and they shall all live and never again sin, either through ungodliness or through pride. But they who are wise shall be humble, and they shall not again transgress, nor shall they sin all the days of their life, nor shall they die of the divine anger or wrath, but they shall complete the number of the days of their life. And their lives shall be increased in peace, and the years of their joy shall be multiplied in eternal gladness and peace all the days of their life. The fall of the angels, the demoralization of mankind, the intercession of the angels on behalf of mankind, the dooms pronounced by God on the angels, the messianic kingdom. Chapter 6. And it came to pass, when the children of men had multiplied, that in those days were born unto them beautiful and comely daughters. And the angels, the children of the heaven, saw and lusted after them, and said to one another, Come, let us choose a wife from among the children of men, and get us children. And Samjaza, who was their leader, said unto them, I fear he will not indeed agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And they all answered him and said, Let us all swear an oath, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. Then swear they all together and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And there were in all 200 who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon. And they called it Mount Hermon because they sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. And these are the names of their leaders. Semiazaz, their leader, Arikabah, Ramael, Kokabiah, Tamiel, Ramiel, Daniel, Ezekiel, Barakijah, Asael, Maros, Atarel, Ananel, Zachiel, Samsapiel, Satarel, Turel, Jomjael, Sariel. These are their chiefs of tens. Chapter 7. and all the others together with them took unto themselves wives, each chose for himself one. And they began to go in unto them and defile themselves with them. And they taught them charms and enchantments and the cutting of roots and made them acquainted with plants. And they became pregnant and they bare great giants whose height was 3,000 ells, who consumed the acquisitions of men. And when men could no longer sustain them, the giants turned against them and devoured mankind. And they began to sin against birds and beasts and reptiles and fish, and to devour one another's flesh. Then the earth made accusation against the lawless ones.
Don't feel empty even after pooping? Stump poop makes thin women look fat. Do this to clear out stump poop fat.
Fiber helps you poop, right? Nope. What about drinking lots of water? Nope.
You've probably seen this guy talking about constipation before.
Do this to clear out stump poop fast.
He seems to know what he's talking about.
It's kind of surprising that diarrhea is actually a form of constipation. It's weird, right?
Wait, what? I did not know that.
Most people think that diarrhea and constipation are two different things, but the fact is diarrhea is your body's last-ditch, desperate attempt to get things moving again.
Okay, that actually makes sense.
So you got diarrhea and things. Well, not only poop cooperate, it comes out. It's supposed to stubborn poop gets left behind, stuck in the urinary insulin, and that lets over poop acts like Velcro, grabs on new poop, causes it to pile up.
So it's bringing
away other poop. Well, not lugging down glasses of psyllium or other fiber because that makes things worse. Because according to the New York gut doctor, fiber has 10 bulk and weight on our stuff. That's definitely like adding more cars to a traffic jam.
Okay, so now fiber, then what are they doing?
They don't take laxatives, choke down psyllium, or drink lots of water just to poop every morning. That's not the best way to unclog stuff. There's
a new way. Okay. Here we go.
It's called the 70-second poop method. It's created by Dr. Gina Sam, a New York City gut doctor. Now, she was one of the very first doctors to investigate a link between the health of our gut and excess weight. And now she's going to show you her 7-second morning ritual for a surprisingly full colon release that anyone can do at home. So if you're feeling backed up and you're feeling bloated or constipated, tap the button below this video to see Dr. Sam's 7-second poop method now. It's going to get things moving again, clearing out your bowels, and you can feel 10 to 15 pounds lighter almost instantly. Tap the button below this video to see Dr. Sam's 7-second poop method.
Only 45 years of God's Word. Truth. Wisdom. If God is not in absolute control of all things, who is? Your trusted source for biblical teaching. In Touch Plus, streaming free on Local Now.
Chapter 8. And Azazel taught men to make swords and knives and shields and breastplates, and made known to them the metals of the earth and the arts of working them, and bracelets and ornaments and the use of antimony and the beautifying of the eyelids, and all kinds of costly stones, and all coloring tinctures. And there arose much godlessness, and they committed fornication, and they were led astray, and became corrupt in all their ways. Semjazzar taught enchantments and root cuttings. Amaros was resolving of enchantments. The Rakijar taught astrology. Kukabel, the constellations. Ezekiel, the knowledge of the clouds. Arachiel, the signs of the earth. Shamsiel, the signs of the sun. And Sariel, the course of the moon. And as men perished, they cried. And their cry went up to heaven. Chapter 9. And then Michael, Uriel, Raphael, and Gabriel looked down from heaven and saw much blood being shed upon the earth, and all lawlessness being brought upon the earth. And they said one to another, the earth, made without inhabitant, cries the voice of their crying up to the gates of heaven. And now to you, the holy ones of heaven, the souls of men make their suit, saying, bring our cause before the Most High. And they said to the Lord of the ages, Lord of lords, God of gods, King of kings, and God of the ages, the throne of thy glory standeth unto all the generations of the ages, and the hast made all things, and power over all things hast thou, and all things are naked and open in thy sight, and thou seest, and nothing can hide thee. Thou seest what Azazel hath done, who hath taught all unrighteousness on earth, and revealed the eternal secrets which were preserved in heaven, which men were striving to learn, and Samjaza, to whom thou hast given authority to bear rule over his associates. And they have gone to the daughters of men upon the earth, and have slept with the women, and have defiled themselves, and revealed to them all kinds of sins. And the women have borne giants, and the whole earth has thereby been filled with blood and unrighteousness. And now behold, the souls of those who have died are crying, and make their suit to the gates of heaven. And their lamentations have ascended, and cannot cease, because of the Lord's deeds which are wrought on the earth. Thou knowest all things before they come to pass, and thou seest these things, and thou dost suffer them. And thou dost not say to us what we are to do to them in regard to these. Chapter 10. Then the Most High, the Holy and Great One, spake, and sent Uriel to the son of Lamech, and said to him, Go to Noah, and tell him in my name, Hide thyself, and reveal to him the end that is approaching, that the whole earth will be destroyed, and a deluge is about to come upon the whole earth, and will destroy all that is on it. Now instruct him that he may escape, and his seed may be preserved for all the generations of the world. And again the Lord said to Raphael, Bind Azazel hand and foot, and cast him into the darkness, and make an opening in the desert, which is in Dudael, and cast him therein, and place upon him rough and jagged rocks, and cover him with darkness, and let him abide there forever, and cover his face that he may not see light. And on the day of the great judgment, he shall be cast into the fire, and heal the earth which the angels have corrupted, and proclaim the healing of the earth, that they may heal the plague, and that all the children of men may not perish through all the secret things that the watchers have disclosed, have taught their sons. And the whole earth has been corrupted through the works that were taught by Azazel. To him ascribe all sin. And to Gabriel said the Lord, Proceed against the bastards and the reprobates, and against the children of fornication, and destroy the children of fornication, and the children of the watchers from amongst men, and cause them to go forth, and send them one against the other, that they may destroy each other in battle. For length of days they shall not have. And no request that they, their fathers, make of thee shall be granted unto their fathers on their behalf. For they hope to live an eternal life, and that each one of them will live 500 years. And the Lord said unto Michael, Go, bind Samjaza and his associates who have united themselves with women, so as to have defiled themselves with them in all their uncleanness. And when their sons have slain one another, and they have seen the destruction of their beloved ones, bind them fast for 70 generations in the valleys of the earth till the day of their judgment and of their consummation, till the judgment that is forever and ever is consummated. And in those days they shall be led off to the abyss of fire, and to the torment and the prison in which they shall be confined forever. And whosoever shall be condemned and destroyed will from thenceforth be bound together with them to the end of all generations, and destroy all the spirits of the reprobate and the children of the watchers, because they have wronged. Destroy all wrong from the face of the earth, and let every evil work come to an end. And let the plant of righteousness and truth appear, and it shall prove a blessing. The works of righteousness and truth shall be planted in truth and joy forevermore. And then shall all the righteous escape, and shall live till they beget thousands of children. And all the days of their youth and their old age shall they complete in peace. And then shall the whole earth be tilled in righteousness, and shall all be planted with trees, and be full of blessing. And all the desirable trees shall be planted, and they shall plant vines on it. And the vine which they plant thereon shall yield wine in abundance. And as for all the seed which is sown thereon, each measure of it shall bear 1,000, and each measure of olives shall yield 10 presses of oil. And cleanse thou the earth from all oppression, and from all unrighteousness, and from all sin, and from all godlessness, and all the uncleanness that is wrought upon the earth. Destroy from off the earth. And all the children of men shall become righteous. And all nations shall offer adoration and shall praise me. And all shall worship me. And the earth shall be cleansed from all defilement and from all sin and from all punishment and from all torment. And I will never again send them upon it. From generation to generation and forever. Chapter 11. And in those days I will open the store chambers of blessing which are in the heaven, so as to send them down upon the earth, over the work and labor of the children of men. And truth and peace shall be associated together throughout all the days of the world, and throughout...
Enoch, and tell about what's going on today. You know, you call me, I'm going to let you know. No, this is why the book.
All the generations of men. Dream's vision of Enoch, his intercession for Azazel and the fallen angels, and his announcement to them of their first and final doing. Chapter 12. Before these things, Enoch was hidden, and no one of the children of men knew where he was hidden, and where he abode, and what had become of him. And his activities had to do with the watchers, and his days were with the Holy One. And I, Enoch, was blessing the Lord of Majesty and the King of the Ages, and lo, the watchers called me, Enoch the scribe, and said to me, Enoch, thou scribe of righteousness, go, declare to the watchers of the heaven who have left the high heaven, the holy eternal place, and have defiled themselves with women, and have done as the children of earth do, and have taken unto themselves wives, ye have wrought great destruction on the earth. And ye shall have no peace nor forgiveness of sin. And inasmuch as they delight themselves in their children, the murder of their beloved ones shall they see, and over the destruction of their children shall they lament, and shall make supplication unto eternity. But mercy and peace shall ye not attain. Chapter 13. And Enoch went and said, Azazel, thou shalt have no peace. A severe sentence has gone forth against thee to put thee in bonds. And I shall not have toleration nor request granted to thee, because of the unrighteousness which thou hast taught, and because of all the works of godlessness and unrighteousness and sin which thou hast shown to men. And I went and spoke to them all together. They were all afraid, and fear and trembling seized them. And they besought me to draw up a petition for them, that they might find forgiveness, and to read their petition in the presence of the Lord of heaven. For from thenceforward they could not speak with him, nor lift up their eyes to heaven for shame of their sins for which they had been condemned. Then I wrote out their petition and the prayer in regard to their spirits and their deeds individually, and in regard to their requests that they should have forgiveness and length of days. And I went off and sat down at the waters of Dan, in the land of Dan, to the south of the west of Hermon. I read their petition, till I fell asleep. And behold, a dream came to me, and visions fell down upon me. And I saw visions of chastisement, and a voice bidding me to tell it to the sons of heaven, and reprimand them. And when I awaked, I came unto them, and they were all sitting gathered together, weeping in Abel's jail, which is between Lebanon and Sennacher, with their faces covered. And I recounted before them all the visions which I had seen in sleep, and I began to speak the words of righteousness, and to reprimand the heavenly watchers. Chapter 14. The book of the words of righteousness, and of the reprimand of the eternal watchers, in accordance with the command of the Holy Great One, in that vision. I saw in my sleep what I will now say with the tongue of flesh and with the breath of my mouth, which the Great One has given to men to converse therewith and understand with the heart. As he has created and given to man the power of understanding the word of wisdom, so hath he created me also, and given me the power of reprimanding the watchers, the children of heaven. I wrote out your petition, and in my vision it appeared thus, that your petition will not be granted unto you throughout all the days of eternity, and that judgment has been finally passed upon you. Yea, your petition will not be granted unto you. And from henceforth you shall not ascend into heaven unto all eternity. And in bonds of the earth the decree has gone forth to bind you to all the days of the world. And that previously you shall have seen the destruction of your beloved son, and he shall have no pleasure in them, but they shall fall before you by the sword. And your petition on their behalf shall not be granted, nor yet on your own, even though you weep and pray and speak all the words contained in the writing which I have written. And the vision was shown to me thus.
I can't believe it worked. Doing this once a day helped me get rid of that constant high-pitched sound in my head.
Behold, in the vision, clouds invited me, and a mist summoned me. And the course of the stars and the lightnings sped and hastened me. And the winds in the vision caused me to fly and lifted me upward and bore me into heaven. And I went in till I drew nigh to a wall which is built of crystals and surrounded by tongues of fire. And it began to affright me. And I went to the tongues of fire and drew nigh to a large house which was built of crystals. And the walls of the house were like tessellated floor made of crystals, and its groundwork was of crystal. Its ceiling was like the path of the stars and the lightnings, and between them were fiery cherubim, and their heaven was clear as water. A flaming fire surrounded the walls, and its portals lay blazed with fire. And I entered into that house, and it was hot as fire and cold as ice. There were no delights of life therein. Fear covered me, and trembling got hold upon me, and as I quaked and trembled, I fell on my face. And I beheld a vision, and lo, it was a second house, greater than the former, and the entire portal stood open before me, and was built of flames of fire, and in every respect so excelled in splendor and magnificent extent, I cannot describe to you its splendor and its extent. And its floor was of fire, and above it were lightnings and a part of the stars, and its ceiling also was flaming fire. And I looked and saw therein a lofty throne. Its appearance was as crystal, and the wheels thereof as the shining sun. And there was the vision of cherubim. And from underneath the throne came streams of flaming fire, so that I could not look thereon. And the great glory sat thereon. And his raiment shone more brightly than the sun, and was whiter than any snow. None of the angels could enter and behold his face, by reason of the magnificence and glory, and no flesh could behold him. The flaming fire was round about him, and a great fire
stood before him, and none around could draw nigh him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him, yet he needed no counselor. And the most holy ones who were nigh to him did not leave by night, nor depart from him. And until then I had been prostrate on my face, trembling. And the Lord called me with his own mouth and said to me, Come hither, Enoch, and hear my word. And one of the holy ones came to me and waked me and made me rise up and approach the door. And I bowed my face downwards. Chapter 15. And he answered, said to me, and I heard his voice, Fear not, Enoch, thou righteous man and righteousness. Approach hither, and hear my voice. And go save the watchers of heaven who have sent thee to intercede for them. You should intercede for men, and not men for you. Wherefore have you left the high, holy, and eternal heaven, and lain with women, and defiled yourselves with the daughters of men, and taken to yourselves wives, and done like the children of earth, and begotten giants as your sons? And though you were holy, spiritual, living the eternal life, you have defiled yourselves with the blood of women, and have begotten children with the blood of flesh. And as the children of men have lusted after flesh and blood, as those also who die and perish. Therefore have I given them wives also, that they might impregnate them, and beget children by them, and thus nothing might be wanting to them on earth. But you were formerly spiritual, living the eternal life, and immortal for all